by the way.
I really like it. I use it today.
So it's actually the wellness committee that came up with that idea to do that. And I think Katie, who decided to do the name. She didn't do the name. But anyway, yeah. So it was a community thing, but it was a wellness community.
Because everybody knows coffee is good for you.
She's doing tea.
They're multi-useful. You can put all kinds of stuff in there. They got the capacity.
Yeah, they're big too.
But I did use it. I haven't used one of those.
I have mine upstairs, and I use it. We have one of those, what do you call them, instant tap hot water.
Oh,
yeah, cool. Really nice.
Speaking of those.
Hello, Danielle. Hi.
You were
just got yours last
time. Yeah. He was just talking about it. He put his to use.
I feel like I contact myself.
I was just looking at the time.
When I pulled up out front, I didn't see any of your cars. I got out the calendar and put my hair on the wrong day. I'm not normally the first one here.
That's Kevin Long. Yeah.
The other one's Liz P.
Your counsel's here.
Yeah, that's true.
Pretty cool as well.
It's like really cold and windy there.
Where is my
usually one of the coldest places. Other than Mount Denier. Well, sometimes maybe once. They get snow like October, November, and at last in May.
Flags to the countries.
I think it could be very good.
It's okay. Well,
so much.
Yeah. And obviously, it didn't stick.
For what? For longer, you have words.
John, did you want to wait just a few more minutes?
No,
sure.
It's your meeting. I think we should get started.
It's your meeting.
Bill, I don't know where Eric is.
Okay. Bill, has the recording started, or are we recording this?
Yes, we're recording.
Okay. So, it's February 1st today. I can't believe that. It is 6:04. I'm going to call this joint City Council Planning Commission meeting to order. And we'll start with roll call. Joe, do you want, I'll go through and then you can pick up from there.
After you, Madam Mayor, yeah.
So I'll start with online. So Chuck Owen.
Present.
Glenn Allen.
Present.
Joellen Kesky.
Present.
And Jill Burns.
Present.
Brendan McGoffin.
Present.
Sarah Diamond.
Present.
Let's see, and I guess we're missing Nick LaBaca or the online. There you go. Hi, Nick. Welcome. And Nick, so we are all here. Joe?
And we'll go online as well. Commissioner Cock. Commissioner Cock? Can you hear me?
Sorry. Present.
There you go. Commissioner Freiberger.
Present.
Present. Commissioner Johnson. Currently absent. Commissioner Huggins.
Present.
Present. Commissioner Maddox. Up here. Commissioner Burnett, is he online? Nope, not here. Commissioner Patizzi, present. Thank you. And there, Phil. He's not here yet. I called him out. Just put a little dash next to his name. We expect him here.
Just simply.
According to sources, they know.
Well, John, I'll turn this over to you.
All right, as you can tell from our jam-packed agenda, today we're talking about proposed comprehensive plan amendments. There is a short memo that came with that. This is really pretty short and sweet. As you know, every year we have the opportunity to update our comprehensive plan, and that includes our zoning map, and then any updates to the comp plan that require amendments to the municipal code or also need to all be run at one time. What we do is we, at the beginning of the year, we set what we call the docket, which is a list of things that the Planning Commission is going to work on, comprehensive plan amendments and zoning amendments for the year. This year is 2023. And then after the council decides what the Planning Commission will work on, the Planning Commission will work on it in bits and pieces, each of the projects throughout the year. And then at the end, bring their recommendations to the council for the council to act on. The comprehensive plan amendments and zoning amendments all need to be considered at the same time. So what you do is you pass, if there's multiple, you would pass all of them at the same time. Or, you know, you decided not to pass any of them, exclude them all at the same time. But what we don't do is have the Planning Commission work on several pieces of the docket and then have the council adopt them individually. So all the comp plan amendments happen at once, and that'll include the zoning changes. And then any municipal code amendments that are related to the comp plan changes will also need to happen at that same time in a separate motion. So I'm getting way ahead of ourselves. That's just the process. This year, as I mentioned in our September, actually it was the October work session, we talked about comprehensive plan items coming up for 2023. And I think I laid out for the City Council and the Planning Commission the proposed timeline that we're going to do our significant comp plan update that's due in 2025. And I explained how we work with the Skagit Council of Governments to do population projections and then right size our urban growth area boundaries based on what our population projections are for the next 20 years. And that'll be from 2025 through 2045. So because that's such a big project, it also includes updating our comprehensive plan, you know, our public facilities element, our land use element, and all the other various elements, the transportation element, to make sure that we can accommodate our projected growth. It's a lot of work. So because that is so much effort, we started early. So we're going to be starting that probably later this year. And then in 2024, will propose the docket changes for that. So next year, well, that's a long way of saying, next year is going to be a big comprehensive plan docket because it will include all of the 2025 updates. We need to have those updated by the end of June in 2025. So we don't have all of 2025 to work on it. So that means we're not going to start working on those updates in 2025. We're going to start in 2024 with the goal of finishing in 2024, which is probably unlikely. Often the docket will bleed over into the following year. That's what has happened in the past and what we expect will happen with the 2024 docket. And I'm telling you all of this, one, because it's always good to give everybody a reminder of the process that we go through to update our comprehensive plan. And two, to point out, because we're going to be making such major changes through 24, 25, that, you know, in this 2023 docket, staff isn't recommending that we make any changes to our comprehensive plan text. Last year, we updated the transportation plan and some other minor amendments that were necessary to meet Department of Ecology requirements for stormwater. and so this year, we're hoping to not do any changes to the comp plan unless there's something that is vitally necessary. And right now, staff has not thought of anything that's going to be vitally necessary in 2023 to update. That said, what we also do with the comp plan update and the docket is request any amendments from the community. So if the community had submitted any text amendments, that would be brought to you right now. So nobody in no organizations or members of the public have requested any changes to the comp plan, but we did receive two requests for zoning changes. So as usual, when somebody requests a zoning change, we ask that council approve that to go onto the docket so the Planning Commission can study it this year. So we can look at it this year and see the merits of it. We're not here tonight to talk about the merits of the particular rezone requests that we have. I did put in the memo a discussion of basic what they are. So we've got two zoning amendment requests. One, the change from R7 residential 57 to residential 15. And that one is 0.85 acres. So not a terribly large lot. And the other is a request to change from R5, residential 5, to R7. And that one is 2.53 acres. So also a fairly small one. So our recommendation is that we run those through the Planning Commission and that means including it on the 2023 docket. Staff doesn't have any recommendations, as I said, for any other comprehensive plan amendments. And at the October City Council Joint Planning Commission meeting, we talked about comp plan updates that you might be interested in doing in 2023. And I think there was a healthy discussion about things that the council wanted to see in the Planning Commission wanted to see happening in our comp plan and thus into the it got more into the specifics of design standards and municipal code updates. But we didn't really land on anything that was dire need in 2023. So
what about parking?
That's not going to require a comp plan change, and we're staff's already working on that one. So that's it's an interesting point. Like, if there's things that the city council would like to see the Planning Commission work on overall, you can ask for that at any time, including tonight. Tonight we're talking about changes to the comp plan. So if the council or the Planning Commission want to discuss that tonight. Now is a great option to do so. If not, what we're asking for is the council to make a motion at the next meeting. This will be a first read on the 2023 docket. And what we would bring to you at the February 8th meeting is a motion to approve the 2023 docket with just the two rezoning requests on it.
And these are done in palindrome.
Yeah. The Planning Commission will work on those two rezones over the course of the year and get it probably be done with it pretty early this year.
Is the quick attendance update? Commissioner Johnson is now present. Thank you.
So unless the council wanted to discuss anything about the comp plan specifically tonight, that's all I have to present, and you can look forward to me bringing a request for a motion to have two things on the docket, and that would be called setting the docket for 2023 at your next city council meeting.
So what about ADUs? Are they part of their comp plan at all? And live work situations, are that part of the comp plan?
So those are separate. Those are two items that Planning Commission just did work on and will be bringing to the council. We'll see if we have the ability to get to you by the 8th. I think it'll probably be on February 8th, the next of the second one in February.
Mayor, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm just curious, how many ADUs do we have? I mean,
that's a question. I really don't know. Though.
About five.
Because we're just afraid they would
be more than that. About five permitted ones since we first passed the ADU ordinance. I think it was in 2018
or
19.
Yeah, it was later than 18.
So that's
it's not a nightmare.
No, it's just been a handful.
That's permitted.
That's permitted.
Yeah.
I mean,
and we don't have the staff really go around.
You know, the cost to put a permitted ADU in is a significant investment for any property owner. I think that's part of the reason we haven't seen this massive influx, even though it's rentable and all those things. But I think staff does a really good job of policing what's out there. We already know that there's probably another handful, not a little bit more, of people just doing their own thing, and that takes time to shake out, I would guess. But it's an investment for a property owner to put something like that together.
But at least it was addressed, and there are.
Yes. Yes.
Has there been any enforcement on that? I guess, has there been any unauthorized ADUs that have been addressed?
We've chased down a few.
I think our senator had one phone.
It's possible.
Not anymore.
And you know, the stance that the staff was given a directive of years ago is if somebody had a second dwelling unit that, you know, they converted their garage back in the 90s, you know, it is what it is. Let's just make sure that we're billing them for utilities and we're not going to chase them down and say that's an unpermitted ADU. Like, it's just.
I think that's a beauty of what has been suggested. And I think this is what Planning Commission is discussing with the Buckle property, because we have it documented. So that is something that I don't know if our fire department checks those like they do businesses do or not. Okay.
No.
So but that's something that at least in your office you would have it documented who has ADUs and who does not.
Right. So the ADU process is if someone wanted to have an ADU, whether it's in a separate building on their property or converting their basement, so it's a separate separate from the main house, main living area, or some, you know, however they choose to do so, they need to come to the planning department, apply for an ADU permit, and we review their site plan and their proposal, and we make them, most importantly, we make them aware of what the conditions are, that the property owner needs to live there. We have them sign a affidavit saying that the property owner will live on site, whether it's in the ADU or it's in the main house, it doesn't matter. And then let them know about the conditions. That should they ever sell their property, they need to let the next property know, property owner know that they, that there's an ADU, and let them know about the conditions. And then that new property owner would then sign another affidavit stating that they would be living on site or get rid of the ADU. So we do administratively manage the existing ADUs, and we have a list of those to maintain. And then once they get the approval for an ADU permit, then we'll accept a building permit for them to do any conversion they need to do. And at that time, when they pick up their building permit, we charge them their building permit fees as well as the impact fees for the ADU. If you recall our discussion last year, we have lower rates for fees on ADUs than we do for full size living units.
So if there's no more discussion regarding ADUs, going back to John's original question, Council, are there topics within the comprehensive plan or issues that you'd like to bring forward or questions or concerns? So what about online? I'm sorry. Nick or Chuck, do you have any comments or questions or concerns regarding moving forward with changes or amendments to the comprehensive plan?
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
I personally don't. I think John's saying that we're just doing those two amendments for the annex or for the rezoning. But besides that, it's the same. I think we just updated, like you mentioned, for like the lids and various other areas. So really a lot of it's done in 2024. And I wouldn't mind getting all the John later on and kind of looking at what those look like for the 2024, 2025. But this one seems like it's pretty much just a fold over.
All right, thank you. Jeff, do you have a comment, question?
No, I don't have any yet. I think, which we done last year, I don't see any reason to make any changes in it.
Okay. Yeah, it was a pretty comprehensive plan. So I have a question for you regarding some of the changes that are happening within, and of course we don't know what's going to happen in the legislature. That could impact what we do with the comprehensive plan. As an FYI, as of the end of January, there were 996 bills submitted for this session. 996. I mean, they're not going to look at them all, but that's crazy. So anyway, going back to the legislation. So the Growth Management Act, how is that going to, because there have been a few changes to that. How's that going to impact our comprehensive plan?
The proposed changes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll see how it shakes out. There are, again, this year, density bills that are seek to require the cities to allow higher density in various parts of their single family zones. Some of them are related to their proximity to a major transit center, which I'm just not sure if any of our bus stops actually qualify as that yet. And there is ADU legislation proposed to require cities to allow ADUs and reduce parking requirements, again, often when near a major transit center. So those two may have an effect on the city and if they should pass. Now, that said, the legislature has tried to pass similar regulations the past two sessions and has failed to do so. So not to say like, it's not going to pass again this year. You never know.
There were 13 bills, the last number I heard, that had bipartisan support. I just heard that yesterday. So I don't know how that's going to shake out. But as we're looking at rezones to get into higher densities, I'm curious to see what's going to come out of Olympia, how it's going to affect all our residential zones overall. So that's a wait and see. I get it.
Yeah, so allowing the increased density in traditional single-family zones is something that is not going to go away anytime soon. I think legislature is going to continue to push it. And the Association of Washington Cities is our lobbying group. And they monitor these and they check with us to make sure that the cities have the opportunity to comment. And I've already sent in comments to AWC on at least one proposed legislative change. So that's something that I spend a fair amount of time on this time of year, is making sure that the city's represented in Olympia on these issues. And that's why I talk to the council and planning commission to understand what your intents are, how you'd like to see the city grow. And I like to think that I have a pretty good feel of pulse of the council, and I'm able to represent you, and I make comments to them, to legislature or to AWC, so they can lobby on our behalf.
Also sign you. In fact, do you get the hot sheet as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to make a note to disseminate that so that you have that, so you can see what they're looking at and what AWC actually recommends. And AWC really does look, I think they do a good job of looking after the cities. And I'll make a note to do that so that you guys have that. One just came out.
I think it comes out weekly.
It does come out weekly. Yesterday? 31st. So, one just came out yesterday.
Yeah.
Because there's also, not that this is, it pertains to what we're talking about tonight, but there's a lot of bills that they're looking at that have been submitted that have to do with law enforcement. And there's some of them that greatly impact the city at the same time. And those are things that, just a simple letter, just asking your legislators, Representative Lowe, Heslett, Senator Wagner, just sending it out and saying, please vote against this. We are opposed to this as a city, as a council member, as a planning commissioner. And they listen to that, and they will respond to it. So you have an active voice. You can have an active voice within the legislature. And that's what John does, too. He sends out statements to AWC and to our legislatures, letting them know, especially regarding housing and property, that this isn't going to work for us, or this would be a great plan for us.
To add to that point, Madam Mayor, I was recently down in Olympia and speaking with Representative Leckenoff and Representative Eslick, and they talked about the weight that constituent letters and logins and statements have, that minority leader and majority leader actually get together when discussing moving forward legislation, and number of comments plays a weighty factor in that. So there is strength in numbers.
Yeah, there certainly is, and they do listen. They do listen. So. And I think as leaders within the community, and especially since we all represent the citizens, it's our duty to do that. Even if it's only one issue, we stand up for at least it's one issue. Anyway, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go down. I took us down a rabbit hole, but I thought it was kind of important.
Are there any particular bills, maybe specifically towards the comp plan, but not necessarily that, or maybe more likely than not, something that we should be paying attention to or being proactive about? Or, because I know that that's kind of been a policy that these two bodies have always had, is trying to be proactive and step ahead of what may be coming down the pike, and trying to craft that in a way that's reflective of employee values. So is there anything in particular that we should be making note of, or there any proactive steps that you would suggest that maybe we should consider?
So, you know, Vegas doesn't have odds on what's going to pass. So it's hard to tell what's going to pass this year. And, you know, experience says, you know, the two things that I brought up, ADU changes. You know, we've already addressed ADUs in our code. So we have already proactively looked at that. The other one being middle housing and increased density. That those kind of changes would be significant. We have to, you know, recalculate our how much available land we have and the impact of doing an upzone, and how much more housing that would create, and that would, how that would affect our ability to accommodate our future growth. And if we increase density, then do we need to look at our transportation plan to match it? So changing density calculations could be significant. One of the things that does get thrown around in some of these density bills is they throw an incentive in there that says you don't have to address the density issues. So that would actually be a good thing. It would make it easier for us to increase our density if we didn't have to recalculate how much land we now have and say, okay, well, now since we're allowing higher density, we don't need as much urban growth area. So they would need to shrink our urban growth area if we increase our density. Some of these bills are including layers that throw that out, so you don't have to worry about that issue, which is actually very helpful if we're going to have to change our density. But short of a mandate that allows us to avoid that, we would have to go through that process, and that's just not something that we want to do. We don't have to. It's expensive. If you recall, I have asked council in budget for our comp plan updates several thousands of dollars to do the land capacity analysis and to have consultants do work for us to do a housing element and the land capacity analysis. So we're really going to be doing that next year. So that one I'm not going to try to do. And aside from that, I'm not aware of any other topics that the legislature is taking on that would be lower hanging fruit that would just take a quick adjustment to in the comp plan this year.
Yes, go ahead.
I just had a question on the commercial use. When we're talking about like urban growth, I often hear about like the residential growth side. Do we take into consideration the need for additional commercial space and like the capacity for different types? Is that something of concern? Because I've had some phone calls of, you know, we're short on this type of commercial space, but we can't use it for this.
So yes, we do. In addition to our population projections, we also work with SCOG. They commission economic development plan that looks at economic growth and in each of the regions. And so that is what it boils down to, is how many people are going to be, how many new jobs are created in cities, or something that will come out of that. And then we'll try to, we need to accommodate that jobs growth. And so we want to make sure that we have enough industrial land and commercial land to accommodate the projected population growth. So that's why when we talk about like adding, you know, people right now are requesting all the time to, you know, have the property changed to residential from, and or use commercial land for residential purposes. And we have to say, well, you know, we still have to accommodate our projected employment growth. And from last I checked, we are on target with our projections for employment growth. So we don't want to lose our commercial land because we still need to have places for businesses to grow.
And you're actually talking about growth management and management act there too, the right. GMA. So, and that is SCOG does handle that, which SCOG stands for Skagit Council of Governments. just so you know. I know we throw out these acronyms, but that's what it is, SCADGIC government. All of the mayors and both cities and towns are represented there, as well as all the commissioners. So your leadership is there. And then John actually works on, it's kind of a technical committee. And they do the fine tuning. And oftentimes, the board that I sit on hears what they have talked about and kind of recommend it. So just so you have a little bit of education there. But something, John, that I thought was really interesting, and I'm wondering if you received the Main Street. I still get information from the Main Street, what'd you call it, the program. And there was quite an article in there that was talking about new commercial businesses. And it was so unexpected. A lot of them were more like entertainment businesses than they were what we consider the traditional business. And I'm curious as far as any information you may have on that, or anything that you're familiar with that may address some of that, because commercial is not going away. It's just, it's reshaping. It's almost like it's a reset. We're doing something else. We went through the pandemic and, oh my God, we came out of something else. I don't know what, but something else. So, yeah.
I did not receive the Main Street email that you got, but I think we all can recognize over the past 10, 15 years that people eat out a lot more and go out for services a lot more. And we see more restaurants than we did when 20 years ago. The millennial generation is known for eating out and going out for entertainment, and that could be one of the drivers in what you're talking about, where we're seeing more smaller restaurants and entertainment venues than we had in the past. And that seems to be what we have a lot of in our downtown, too, is that's how people are spending their entertainment dollars, dining out, and maybe it's because people have more disposable income, discretionary income for entertainment, I'm not sure, or if it's just a change in values. Or
I wonder if it's, I thought perhaps people just want to be social. Spent so many years masked up and held up in our homes, our offices, that we want to be out and we want to do things. I know one of the things they talked about were escape rooms. Read about them. That's one. That's a big. That's a really big business right now. Axe throwing. Who knew? Trying to remember what the other ones were, but it was really interesting. They were all
arcades.
Yeah, exactly. So like arcades.
Now has
yeah.
Two or three arcades, yeah. And two gaming stores for like live action role play games. Easy description would be something like Dungeons and Dragons, where people sit around a table and play a game together. And so these are getting more and more common. Like in the 80s, yeah, those are arcades. And then they went away for a long time, but they are coming back.
So just to throw a comment to what you were talking about, just our zone, we have a lot of commercial space that's unutilized. It's still in a non-conforming use because there's a lot of residences there. So until those owners have the opportunity to convert that particular real estate asset into a different use class, which it's already permitted to do, then you'll start to see it. But we have a lot of space. And unfortunately, I've seen just even prices downtown on a per square foot basis, barely 10, 12 bucks a square foot. And I'm just shocked people haven't snapped that stuff up.
So Joe, is that just within Cedro, or are you talking about the county?
No, just Cedro. Go right up Highway 20. All those residences on the left and right-hand side, that's all mixed commercial zone. But the non-conforming uses, I have a client that has 3 acres of it. Okay, and it was just three single-family residences. Are they looking forward to what the zone is going to allow? You bet they are. That's not happening overnight. The cost of doing it right now, especially with the cost of money being driven up, I think this is the greatest opportunity out here, especially with Highway 20. I'm surprised we haven't grown more. But when you see a Starbucks coming here, that means somebody in Starbucks did that analysis that says, I'm going to sink a couple billion bucks to put a facility in small towns like this, that is growing rapidly, and anybody here can tell you. So when you see those big players doing stuff like that, that's a sign.
So I don't, I'm sure because of the business you're in, so I have heard a lot of conversations. I've had a lot of conversations with individuals who have been from out of county who have said Cedarville is the next place to grow.
Absolutely.
I mean, they are just excited about Cedarville. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a little dumbfounded because I guess I see us as we're moving forward, yes, but I don't see, I guess, I see potential, but not like they do. When they talk, it's like catching some sort of a vision or a fire. It's really interesting.
I'll tell you why. It's location, location, location. As the growth is now expanding up I-5, like the Growth Management Act wanted when it first did it, you need to be around transportation hubs, essential public facilities. Think of what we got. We have sewer. We got power. We got roads that can still be expanded. We need to get rid of the potato shed because that's someone that's pretty much blocking it. But we need to expand Cook Road. When they finally get to that expansion on Cook Road and figure out what they're going to do in Old Highway 99, doubling up that exit and getting people across it. Yeah, this is. I think we're in for renaissance going forward. I'm the biggest fan of this city. That's why I live here. I think we got it going on. I think we do a really good job of visualizing the future, seeing things that are coming at us to try and front run it. Yeah, but think where you live. I mean, look out your windows. Why wouldn't you want to be here? You're only 4 miles from I-5. And Amtrak station.
Yeah, that used to be a disadvantage. Now it's an advantage. Yeah, people love it. Now it's an advantage. I want to be off that. Yeah.
Right. You can now work at home, right? Tech businesses are exploding. People are working out of their homes. I had a, just not to digress a little bit, I had a support call I had to make. I could hear the baby crying in the background. Right. So, yeah, we're finding multiple ways, just technology-based, that nobody died during COVID. And look what we got right here. I love Zoom meetings. I can't be someplace. I was right in. We canceled our July Planning Commission meeting. I was in Maui. I was going to do it from Maui just for the fact that it's that. I ran a Planning Commission meeting from Maui. You can do anything anywhere these days. Yeah, I'm just saying. I made a commitment, darn it.
So, Madam Mayor, with that thought in mind, I did meet with Mark about traffic concerns. And running everything up on the north end or figuring out how we do that with the increased flow, you know, I mean, obviously people see there's growth opportunity. There's businesses going up 20 going east, you know, 9's even seeming a lot more popular. Right now, the big thing that we got in the works is a roundabout on Township and basically 9 and John Liner, and then another on Trail and another up on Cook. But all of those are going to be a little bit of impedance to traffic. And then definitely if we have growth, most of our traffic is around that north side. So I don't know, that should be a topic of discussion at some point within the Planning Commission of how we look at doing that over 6 months, over a year and a half. I know there's a 25 plan, a 2026, 27 plan, but it seems like we'll be getting congested within the next, you know, year or so. And just kind of seeing what's on the pike for kind of alleviating some of that. Not everything can be diverted down State Street and around or downtown Tip to State Street and over to 9. So just well, look out with the map.
You're familiar, right, Nick? You're familiar with the expansion of the John Liner Road, which will go. We're building a trestle, so you're familiar with that. So that will help alleviate some of that, especially people who are getting to work and needing to connect with Cook Road that are coming off of 9 or who live north of Cedarville.
Yeah, I believe that's the 7 plan, isn't it? If we can get the funding, at best 2027 is when that's looking like it's a possibility of being completed. I believe if that's a correct assessment, maybe John knows more.
You know, we've had this conversation before, and the bottleneck is not the city. Bottleneck is up along I-5, Cook Road, up on that way, going down 20. I mean, think about it. Going down 20, you're coming down to a single lane that cannot be expanded. Cook Road is the obvious thing, but it's out of our jurisdiction. You got Skagit County, state DOT that needs to handle it. Then you got a railroad, a major freight line there that is, you know, the federal government. So there's so many things that are kind of in the way as well as funding to get something effective in there. We've been talking about this for a long time, at least as long as I've been around. I think that was 2014. This comes up all the time, especially Cook Road. You got expanded.
You're thinking if Cook Road is expanded, then all traffic coming in from 20 through Burlington into here, 9 going right into there, and then Cook Road, kind of they all kind of converge around that Moore Street. You think that Cook Road expansion would alleviate a lot of that?
The answer is yes. And well, this is my own personal feeling on it because I've traveled these roads, especially during rush hour. It's a combination of not just the residential growth, it's the industrial growth. I mean, if you just sat at the railroad tracks on Cook Road at rush hour, just watched what comes on by, I mean, you have a massive amount of industrial traffic that rolls up there as well. Because the industrial base in the valley is growing as well. It's not just Cedro Woolley. It's Lyman. It's pushing up into concrete. Then you're right. You have Highway 9. So you have the Canadians coming down 9. Because from what I understand, they avoid a bunch of way stations. And it's just a different way of getting onto I-5, depending on where you're coming from British Columbia. So it's a convergence of things. So if you can get that traffic moving a little bit easier to get it on I-5, yeah, I think you'd see a bit of a difference because it would spread it out a little bit more.
There's also an issue. I'm sorry, did I get something wrong? There's also an issue with coming off of I-5 and getting onto Cook.
Yeah.
And that is a discussion that we have had in our SCOG transportation, the TIB transportation board. In fact, I made the request. I don't know why they don't put up a sign that states as you past the Burlington exit, that the next exit where the parking lot is at. But there's a sign there that says, you know, get off here to alleviate traffic. Something like that lets people know. They
That's
can
what I do.
I do too, so I don't have to sit on the freeway.
They'll back up onto the freeway from 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
But, you know, if we're represented on SCOG, this is really out of our jurisdiction. How to solve all that, you know, we can put input in, but you know, we're just going in circles talking about how we're gonna fix
I'm sorry, we have gotten off topic. We're just talking about things that are related to traffic. Nick brought up the
more people, the need. More traffic.
Yeah.
Well, I thought I remembered Mark saying that they DOT funded that Cook Road.
They did
for lights and signals.
They did.
But I did have one question on the congestion part. There's a new movement called the micro transit where you have vehicles that pick up people from neighborhoods and take them to transit centers. And those buses do the inner city transport. And it's something I've talked to Skagit Transit about that working outside of this. But have we considered incorporating like drop-off pickup zones within neighborhoods where there's a dedicated spot for school buses to pick up kids, or you know, someone has an Uber or some other pickup service, that there's like dedicated spots throughout the city that have some regulations for 15 minutes, or this is what you can do in these zones. Have we considered something?
No, but that could be the kind of thing that the comp plan addresses when we update the updated next year.
So is that something that can be put on the agenda now and just kind of rolled forward as, because I think that's coming quicker than we think with the way AI is going, the advancement of, you know, artificial intelligence, which I know eventually there will be driverless cars and things like that that'll be coming. So are we thinking ahead like that? That's a good question. Are we thinking about moving in that direction with vehicles?
Did we put that in the UVMU as a separate parking spot in front of those, in front of UVMU projects for Uber style, Lyft style parking? I swear we talked about that.
I know we talked about it, and I don't remember what manifestation it took in the UVMU.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, to include the concept in our land use updates and our comp plan update, is a good idea. I just don't know how we would, I don't know if it would be worth opening up our transportation plan in 2023 to discuss this when we're doing the whole hog major review in 2024. So would it be possible to, you know, make sure that we're addressing these when we get to this 2024? Let's start a list of interesting and necessary updates that we'd like to see in the latter ones. We need to push things too far down the road, but it is next year.
And the next year's not that far away. We're already into that one.
Yeah. It's scary. The older I get, the quicker it goes.
I'd like to see that. And I'd also like to see discussion of a transit center. So it really doesn't even have an official transit center, I don't think, yet. And if we do it,
bus stop at by the Walgreens.
By Walgreens, okay. Well, that's what I was going to say. That would be my guess if we did have one, but I'd never heard that we have. And if you want to see development happen, just select a spot as a transit center, and then you will, or a, you know, a big city, a subway station, or when you lay out tracks for street cars and that kind of stuff, and you immediately get people buying land and developing to do a high rise. So, if you wanted to get more capacity in housing in Cedar Willy, just you need a transit center and you need some other things, and then you'll immediately have high rise growth there.
We need SkyTrain.
SkyTrain.
And I would happen to, my personal opinion is I'm completely against all that. I'm just real honest in all of that. Like the amount of growth, the amount of constituents that I have approached me about the high density that's coming into town, the apartments, the growth, all of that is so much kickback. The prices of the apartments that are in right now, yes, I know it's considered an urban village, but the cost to move into them and maintain them right now in the economy that we're in is very difficult for a lot of people. And then to assume that they would be working remotely or locally, putting the Starbucks in, great. But at the end of the day, that's not going to employ the 167 heads that are then scheduled for that specific residence. And then we've got two more stages to come through and then additional ones to go in. And so Nick makes a very good point with the congestion that comes with it as well. And yes, some of that is out of our jurisdiction. We have no control over Cook Road and Highway 20 in certain areas, but we have to understand that our hands are tied. And then we go into, well, to get rid of the potato shed, my opinion, absolutely not. But I work in the
industry. I didn't mean that. I was just being...
Correct. But when farmland goes away, what happens, right? Where Skagit County is really based on ag. And you take that stuff away, you take that farmland away. There's already for sale signs on Cook Road for farmland right now because the farmers can't afford to operate that because traffic is so backed up that you add 2 hours to a day at the cost of diesel. They cannot afford to run that, get it into the market, and for people to go to the grocery store and purchase it. There's a trickle-down effect in the inflation that we see at the grocery store, and it starts with the impact that we're creating with the density that we're doing and the farmland that's being pulled and the repercussions. And so all of that, I just think we need to tread very carefully on where we're going with the density that we're talking about, because Cedar Willy as a whole is landlocked. We can only do so much. And I understand that the state has regulations. There are things that we have to do, but people are moving here. People that I've talked to that moved into my ward are moving here because we're not Seattle, because we're not Everett and Linwood or Snohomish even. There are pockets that are really nice, right? But at the end of the day, they're moving here because we aren't that. We don't have all of that. And then they come here and they're like, well, that stuff just went up. That stuff just went up. All approved well before I was ever around in this position. But when they see that trickling up, they're like, you know, I moved here to get away from that. And now this is what are we becoming?
Everybody in this room would agree with everything you just said. Here's the challenge, and it's a fine line. It's the State Growth Management Act. And since we're a city, the GMA looks at sewer and water and power and all that stuff. These new numbers that are going to come out of the state in the next couple of weeks or so, that we'll see. we got to get a plan together of how we're going to accommodate all of that. I got to tell you, it's a real fine line of how you can do it. That's why if you see something like the new project behind the McDonald's, the Janicki project, right? It's not a bad looking building. However, we were able to get X amount of density in that one site without it trickling out and doing things like this. And that's the first calculation I'm doing. Now we're going to have from R5 to R7. That's the first thing we're going to have. I'm going from 8,700 square foot properties down to 6,200. I just went from a density of, I round up from 13 to 18. So I hear you loud and clear. But it's that fine line until they tell us what's coming out. We got to figure out a plan on how that's going to work. And it's coming up to you folks anyway to figure out if you're going to say, okay, that's okay or not.
Yeah. Well, my other concern is that in New York City, we don't have, I mean, if we're not very careful, we could become a low-income bedroom community.
No, we don't want
you
that.
Know, with agreed. No income to support it,
agreed.
No tax structure that's going to support it.
Totally agree.
And that's scary if you look down the line at the amount of density and the lack of business development that we have coming in and industrial opportunity to support it.
That is something that's deeply concerned me as well, as not seeing the level of jobs going up with the level of housing and trying to figure out ways that we can get more businesses in here. You heard me trying to find ideas in the development committee, because if we don't have the jobs here, then there is that mass exodus in the morning and then the mass of people coming in the evening, and you have way more traffic and the same level of people.
Right.
You would have less traffic if there were more jobs here for them. I know people are telecommuting, as you brought up before, but there's still a significant number of people who are heading to work.
Right, and a lot of these corporates are now going back into, I mean, Starbucks just announced that their corporate office is going to mandate them being back in the office a minimum of 2 days a week. Corporate hadn't been back in several years, but because it's not, it came down to the issue that here's the baristas and people working in, you know, in the stores are required, and how is that not realistic to compare to these people that are at corporate? So, I mean, they just made national news announcing that they're going to start going back into the office. I have a sister that works in Amazon and one that works at Microsoft. They've been remote for a couple years, but they're now being told that they're going to be going back into the office. And so the reality is some of these people that may telecommute may also have to have a vehicle because they've got to go too. So that's additional parking that I know people are trying to get rid of, but they still feel to go to their job or get where they want to go.
You know, the job market's changed too, and I think COVID was a major game changer that we're finding that there's still a lot of people. I mean, get the bigger corporate, what their position is on that. There's still a lot of folks that work out of their house. Mm-hmm. I was in the downtown 48 for 3 years. I had a whole bunch of neighbors that just worked straight out of their apartment. They never had any tech support. They're just all different types, even just customer support. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to know it until it's already occurred.
Right.
But like I said, it's that whole fine line that when the state starts telling us that this is what we need you to take a look at. I got to tell you, we don't take these decisions lightly. Mm-hmm. We beat it to death. So, yeah, it's not like we don't hear you. We totally hear you. And that's why we all live here. It's a great place to live. We get it.
And one of the interesting concerns I get, I hear people telling me, well, you know, my kid can't find a house here. They can't. It's not just they can't find something they can afford. They just can't find a house here. They can't find one to look at. They can't find a place to live here. And they're ending up leaving the area because of housing. And then at the same time, I'll get people who say, well, I don't want growth. And it's a tough juggling act for us to find that happy middle where, you know, your kid can move out of your house and still find a place to live where
I'm a real estate broker. I live in this world. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, you really see that. But it's challenging for us to try to find that happy middle place where we're satisfying, I guess, being tugged on by so many different directions, satisfying the state, making sure that we're providing enough houses.
Do we have the infrastructure? Do we have the transportation? Yeah, by the jurisdictions that, you know, just I'm going to end it here, but this is kind of important. So we're required by our comp plan that we have to handle X capacity, but it never includes the community next to you. So I always gave a great example, like from the city of Edmonds, still needed to go through Mount Lake Terrace, still need to go through multiple jurisdictions by the time they got to I-5. So, okay, their roads were fine just for Edmonds, but all their impact pushed into all the adjacent communities. Our impact here is pushing into Burlington, hands down, okay? if they put more growth out in line, we ever figure out the water situation out here, okay, and they open that up, the amount of growth that can happen east of us is massive.
Well, and so, to kind of go off of that too, there's a lot of commercial activity going.
Oh yeah,
because gigantic industries, they're expanding.
Good commercial activity, by the way.
So there's a lot of what you're saying, that the people coming from Bellingham, coming through Cedar Woolley and going to Hamilton. And that's, you know, that's only going to grow in the next couple of years.
I mean, as those businesses grow, yes.
And so I think the other part of that is the jobs in Cedar Woolley are also outside of Cedar Woolley by a little bit. So the people that want to go work at these Hamilton facilities, they're looking in Cedar Woolley for housing, and it's really short. So we're also supporting not just the job growth directly in Cedar Woolley, but just outside. And I think with the Swift Center, I don't know if we've had developments on that yet, but that's also coming on fairly soon. And so the development for the commercial there is pretty marginal.
I think these are all positive things myself, but how do we handle them? Right, that's what all of our job is.
Right, and then looking at the job sector that's coming in and what's relative to the type of living style that these people want to have, right? Because at one point I had talked to several different people, and you know they had higher positions working in at Janicki or different positions through town. None of them lived here, not one, because we didn't have the type of homes with the property that they wanted to be with their families or raise their families in or go home to every day. They didn't want to live in an apartment. They didn't want to live in like a Klinger Estates, you know, those sorts of things.
Well,
so we also have to take a look at the type of jobs that we have that are coming in, and does the type of housing we have support what these people are looking for or would be wanting, right? Like you don't create something, whole bunch of high density housing for people that are never going to live there and work here. We're balancing two different balls, and we're not on the same page.
It's such a dynamic environment as well. The environment that existed a year ago, especially for first time home buyers, is totally flipped upside down because mortgage rates have basically doubled.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're finally seeing, what I think is a good thing, finally starting to see the housing prices.
Yeah.
Not doing this 20% crazy growth a year,
right?
That all of a sudden they're starting to flatten out. Seattle has been massively impacted, which was way overdue, by the way. So you're seeing some benefits as well as some adjustments that I agree with you, especially when we start zoning from an R7 to a 15. Mm-hmm. Those are apartment buildings.
Mm-hmm.
I've had this discussion with builders in town.
Right.
I'd love to see more condos where somebody actually owns some. There's a lot of people that are retired. They don't want to do the lawn. They want to go out on that deck. Yeah, amazing views here, but they own it. We're, unfortunately, it looks like that apartment market, that's not just here. It's everywhere. So I get calls every day. Have any multifamily dirt?
Mm-hmm. Well, the hard part is when you've got an apartment that's $2,600 a month, how are they going to save for down payment for a house with the economy that we're in?
I think the market is the new apartments are built, building are for growth for people coming in that can't afford them. It's not for the community.
Right.
No,
it's more people coming in, but are they coming in and they're not spending their dollars here all day to day? They don't live here. I mean, they're going to live here, but they're not working here.
Apartments are great,
too. I'm just saying there's a disconnect between what the people who are building apartments
correct.
Are looking at and what people who live here.
Correct. 100%.
And I agree with you. Even Sedron is here. Rothenbieler is here. There's other businesses that are here. People are coming in for it. And they're having lunch in town. And they're going to Oliver and Hammer, buying different things in town.
Yeah.
So there's more happening here than what maybe we're fully seeing. So, and I think it'll just continue to grow.
Just go down Metcalf at 10 o'clock in the morning, any morning. It's packed.
Mm-hmm. And there's a ton of employment happening across the street.
Absolutely. Yeah.
A ton of it. That nobody would think it is, because when we look at it, we think it's falling down. But it's not. So it's 7 o'clock. So John, we had set it up
Sorry.
So that you would have an hour. I do want to give though those who are online an opportunity to make any last comments. They haven't really been included in the conversation. So I don't know, Nick, Paul, Chuck, do you have anything to add or say?
For me, Madam Mayor, I just wanted to say that Yeah, it's a great discussion. I'm glad we're having it. I wish that we weren't pressed into a corner by the state, and I wish we had a little bit more of a mentality to kind of protect our little nook here. It is one of those things that I do hear a lot of, but one of the big things downtown with all the businesses is the parking situation. So we do get busy down there, but we don't have enough parking in the downtown. And that's been one of the issues that I've talked to with the businesses that are down there. And I do agree, like as the traffic moves or as businesses move up to 20, Janicki building that business, I talked to people on Concrete. They're wanting to see some more housing up there, housing in Hamilton. You're going to have more traffic going back and forth because the spread's going to happen more east and more of the larger businesses going up there or support businesses, if anything. And we will see more traffic coming through. So I think a while back we talked about working away from densifying the entire community and working like a semi-densifying if we had to by state, where we had some type of multifamily in residential neighborhoods that were kind of spread around and not all just set up as apartment after apartment. Although there's even new bills in the House right now that are suggesting capping rent increases at 3%. So landlords are already starting at a high rent. So to Councilwoman Diamond's point, you know, if it's $2,200 to get an apartment and they realize, hey, we're going to cap our rent, we can't go more than 3% increase or something like that, then they're going to split their rent at $2,500 or more. Or residential houses are going to start more, and they're going to start, you'll see a trickle down effect from what's happening in the state legislative into our small, we call it a city, but our small community. So it's an interesting task, and I'm thankful that the commissioners are on it, and sounds like everybody's well thought throughout this process. So.
Okay, thank you. Paul, it looked like you were going to say something.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a follow up on the transportation. I've lived here for 25 years and commuted to Bellingham to work at Western Washington University for 18 years. And the amount of traffic coming into Cook Road has probably, in those 18 years, gone up by 10. And the folks, it's interesting, the folks coming in from the north at rush hour is bad. But the folks coming from the north into the going south, but the folks coming from the south, you can't even get, I mean, it's way down the interstate. And I think there's some surprising statistics if you dug into it. I bet you a lot of folks down south as far as Seattle live here or live in this area. I have a relative who's a union construction worker. He's down in Seattle every day. And then from the other direction in Bellingham, you know, working at Western, nobody can have, I mean, I know real estate prices have gone down, but literally no one at Western, which employs 2,000 people, can afford to live in Bellingham. They go to Ferndale, they go to Linden, and they come down here. So I think you are getting pushed from both directions, north and south. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you. Oh, one other thing. Thank you to the mayor and city council for appointing me to the planning commission. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for applying. We look forward to, I think you're going to be a great asset. So we look forward to hearing more from you.
Thank you.
And to your point, my husband for 24 years commuted from Cedar Woolley down to Microsoft. And he did that. He carpooled. It was a van. So he only had to drive once every 6 weeks or something like that. But still, it's wear and tear. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any discussion that light rail might end up here? I know
they're slowly pushing it up this way, but it takes forever for it to get built. So yeah. We're hoping it comes this way, but it's not anything that's a hard and fast discussion. I can tell you that.
That would alleviate traffic, just throwing it out there. But it would also bring in growth. So I don't know what you do.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Johnson?
I just wanted to get back to John's original question about, you know, is there anything in particular that maybe we want to open up and discuss? And something that has been kind of reoccurring thing since I've gotten on the planning commission 13 years ago or something like that. I know Pat was a voice for it even back then, was cycling and trails and that sort of thing. And I've been hearing more and more discussion about it. just randomly coming up, where I think there's a much larger contingency of cyclists in our community than we might actually know. And I think to the point that, you know, in the mayor's address today at Chambers, she talked about, you know, the and not so distant future, trails basically converging on Woolley. And so I think between that and this, these new generations being more outdoor focused and just given the natural beauty that we rest in, I think it would behoove us to start to like really look at outdoor recreation, trails, bike paths, that sort of thing to kind of, you know, maybe bolster it, maybe re-envision it from whenever we last addressed it and kind of see if there's ways that, you know, things that we need to eliminate or things that we can really enhance and start moving in that direction. So that's something that I would like to see discussed.
Eric, I'll be a good, if we put in bike lanes, are they going to start buying a license? Because they're sharing the road just like everybody else is paying.
That's yeah, come up quite a bit.
I'd like to go a whole different way. I just want to piggyback on you for a second. City of Toronto, I think it is, they ran with my idea, and they put their a lot of their bike lanes in their alleyways and made them so that they were kind of community-oriented along their alleyways because the infrastructure is already there. It doesn't have to be paved for a bicycle, although it's always better if it is. But anyway, they put them into the alleyways, so it's walking and bicycling in the alleys and the streets are for cars. And then they allowed, I can't remember the exact name of it, but they call them alleyway residences and stuff. So if you have a garage that's facing an alley, you can take that footprint of that thing and you can put a home on that same exact footprint facing the alleyway. So they're basically building a second community that is the more walking bicycling community in, facing the alleyways. And then the traditional houses that were there facing the streets.
They didn't have to cut a road down to put in a bike lane. They went an alternative route.
Yeah, they're not putting in bike lanes on their main street. They probably are in some places, but in this area where they've been experimenting for the last 15 years, they've been just keeping the bicycle routes in the alleyways and orienting things. Isn't that brilliant?
It's got to figure out. The infrastructure's already there.
But just because it's green doesn't make it perfect.
No, it doesn't mean it's perfect. No, and also the in some places they just got green spaces that are they're more like parks than so that all the backyards, a portion of them are park facing the alleyway, and so they're nice green spaces.
Oh, I'm not opposed. I've got a bike myself. You know, it's just I don't think they should take width out of roads that are existing within bike lanes for somebody that doesn't pay a darn thing for them.
So anyway, just to piggyback on Eric there, that I would also like to talk about that, and also the idea that you make a whole new environment out of your alleyways, because we don't pick up garbage there anymore. The sewer pipes still run down a lot of them, but we don't pick up garbage back there. They're really kind of just languishing, and there's a place where we can grow and add a little bit of density and have it be for people who like to ride bicycles and walk. So, anyway.
Your point is well taken. I want to see it holistically. So, I mean, that's just one aspect of a much larger concept. And so, you know, I would like to really see, you know, anything from what Pat's talking about to, you know, trails in general, which doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, cyclists oriented, but, you know, getting out to do running or just walking. I mean, we live in natural beauty. So I say we take advantage of it. I mean, and that's half of the reason why people move here. It's not just because we're a small town. It's because we live in freaking gorgeous. So let's take it. Week. Yeah.
On the park up there. So
I've never seen any of you guys running with me on the Cascade Trail. I've only seen John Seidlin.
He's a mean machine. So if there's nothing else, can we wrap this up? John, I want to give you the last word here.
So thanks for the great conversation about potential future topics that Planning Commission. I think we've discovered a lot of things that the Council and the Planning Commission are interested in discussing and committing to bringing those up and
and holding the planning commission to remember to bring these up when we talk about it in 2024. As far as a project in front of you today, it looks like I'll be bringing the proposed 2023 docket to you at the at your next city council meeting to set the docket to just include the two rezone requests that the planning commission can work on, hopefully knock out quickly this year.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your leadership. Appreciate the work that you do. And I, again, planning commission, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You do great work and you provide for us oftentimes a means and a way to move forward. And we appreciate that. And I appreciate, John, these meetings because it allows us to hear one another and to kind of put us both on all of us on the same page so that you're not working hard on something, you bring it to us and we say, well, that way, that's not what we want here. So, you know, you listen to us and we appreciate that.
We love what we do. This is a great group. We really give a win. But it's that fine line. A lot of times we don't know it until it comes at us. Mm-hmm. We've always tried to be proactive on things all the time.
Well, I appreciate the forward thinking, the ideas that are being brought forward that are, you know, envisioning. I think that's spot on. I think it's exactly the way that we need to be thinking. And it aligns with really what we appreciate and what this council, we hear the council say over and over again, is that we love our city. We love the beauty that we have here. We appreciate the resources. We want to maintain it. How can we live here and thoroughly enjoy it and also make it economically viable? If people are coming in from the Centennial Trail across the river to pedal into Cedro on the Cascade Trail, they're going to be stopping and eating here and buying goods here. So that's what we want. Exactly.
I ran into people from Sweden this summer, just walking downtown. They were hiking the North Cascades. This is the only place you could really go for a decent restaurant and everything else. We're very unique where our location is. And I will be at Starbucks. I was happy to see that.
I want to talk about actually, and this is it's really primarily just with the city council, but the planning commission is absolutely welcome to stay. And that has to do with the North Star project that we're working on and have been for over a year. And it concerns the House Bill 1590, the funding that's come out of that. And I don't have a real long presentation. What I wanted to do, well, first off, let me ask, how many of you have been reading the North Star information that I'm sending you via email? Okay, so then you have a pretty good idea of some of what we're talking about and what we're looking to do. So I wanted to know that because of some of the questions that I've received, and I thought, well, maybe my email's not being received, but it must be received. I just don't know if you're seeing it or not. So, you know, if you have opportunity to do that, to go back through and read some of that, please do. Please do. This is really an important project, and it's really going to be impactful, not just for our citizens, but for the citizens in the county. So, I don't know. John, I know the Planning Commission, you're welcome to stay if you'd like.
I have no idea what North Star even is. I was curious myself.
Okay. It's House Bill.
Maybe.
I was going to watch it.
See some of what we're talking about here. So really what I wanted to do was just talk a little bit, maybe clear up some questions or information regarding the funding. So I just asked questions. I put them out there and I kind of answered them. And forgive me that I'm going to be reading some of this. But the first question is, how did North Star come about? How did this come about? Well, first off, I want to say all the commissioners are engaged in it, but Commissioner Janicki really has a heart for wanting to bring together the county and the cities to find solutions that will not just put a band-aid on the situations that we have, like housing and mental health and co-occurring disorders, but to try to find some sort of solutions. And granted, we don't have all the facilities here and we don't have a ton of money to make that those solutions happen. But the idea was, what Commissioner Janicki believed, is that if we came together with what we had, we're stronger together, and the more money that we have, we can do faster and bigger projects together. And that, you know, I don't even have to justify that. Anybody, you all know that that's true. So she put on the task Jennifer Johnson, who's our Skagit, Skagit County Deputy Administrator, who took it to the next step, and she got in contact and researched Tenfold. And Tenfold, briefly, is a company that works with organizations to articulate and define mutual goals. Basically, how do you learn to work together? How do you learn to do that? Because if every city and the commissioners are coming together, you can imagine that maybe we all don't have the same goals, because every city has different needs. So they brought in this Tenfold to do much more than just that. But that's basically what they have been doing for us, is helping us find that center. Which brings me to, how did we come up with the name North Star? Well, North Star is defining where those needs are at, and deciding that this is what we want to work on, and then that is our goal. That is going to be our star, and it's going to be our compass that's going to guide us as we move through the process of working together. So the third question I asked is, how and where does House Bill 1590 funding come from? And I pulled up the document. It was the final, it's the final bill report. It's House Bill 1590. You actually saw this when you voted to receive the funding back in 2020. But it is, it's from the legislature, who is allowing local sales and use tax for affordable housing to be imposed. So that's what this is about. And I highlighted what it's to be used for. It's a minimum of 60% of the funding that we receive that's collected is to be used for constructing affordable housing and facilities providing housing-related services, constructing mental and behavioral health-related facilities, or funding the operation and maintenance costs of newly constructed affordable housing, facilities providing housing-related services, or the evaluation and treatment centers. The affordable housing and facilities providing housing-related programs may only serve the following individuals with income who, below 60% of area median income, individuals with mental health, mental illness, veterans, senior citizens, homeless families with children, unaccompanied homeless youth, persons with disabilities, or domestic violence victims. The remainder of the money, so that's 60%, the remainder of the money that is collected may be used for the operations and delivery or evaluations of mental or behavioral treatment programs. And so, such as what we have out here. Yeah, I call it the Behavioral Health Center, but the county ended up naming it the Skagit County Crisis Stabilization Center. A long name. It's a mental health center.
When is that actually going to open?
It's open.
When I've had multiple people ask me.
Yeah,
it's open. I know there's ribbon cutting in August, but I haven't seen people actively giving out.
We've already done the ribbon cutting.
I know.
Yeah.
I just didn't know that there were people. I drive past it every single day, and I never see cars out
there's
there.
No cars, but you see people milling around there when it's dark out, so you can see them through the window. Because I was, when's that place going to open?
Yeah, I've seen like two cars there. Yeah.
And Pioneer Center's closed then, right?
And they closed at the end of this January. Yeah, I went up for the closing.
Well, that was 140 some beds up there.
Yeah, and when they closed, they only had a little over 100. So they just couldn't. It was bleeding money. They just couldn't afford to keep it open. So so it is now gone. But they are still going to keep the, I believe it's the Alcohol Center over in Burlington. They're going to keep that one.
So. And what is our place now? Out on the highway?
I think it's 32.
So I'm just wondering what happens to the other 110 feet.
Well, you know, so this is what's really interesting, and not a lot of people knew this, but up at Pioneer Center North, the majority of people came from out of county. Mm-hmm. And so when I worked up there for a while. I worked up there as a counselor. And when they had completed treatment, we sent them back to their county. We did not let them stay here. They had to get on a bus and they had to go back to the county.
Right.
And we provided housing for them, set them up in housing, and also and continued schooling and treatment. So it's an excellent program that Pioneer Center North has. It's actually Pioneer Human Services, Pioneer Center North, which is just one of their facilities. So anyway, that's what it's about. That's what this is about, is it's not necessarily, I know that there was concern that it's for people who are living on the street, the ones that are the most desperate, the ones that are usually the most impaired. No doubt that, you know, there is a place like that for them, the first step. But what we're looking to do in particular is for the veterans, senior citizens, the single moms with kids, the families with children, the those with disabilities. That's what we're looking to do. And so what we did is we've spent over a year and sometimes two or three times a month meeting. What we decided to do was meet with those people who provide those services. So some of the people that we met with, and they're on the list that I sent out, you know, like the Northwest Youth Services, YMCA Oasis, Anacortes Family Center, Catholic Community Services, Skagit Domestic Violence, Housing Authority, Family Promise, Compass Power, Community Action. These are just to name a few. Because we wanted to know, what did they see as the flaw, and what did they think we needed to see to make things run smoother and better? What's a better method? How can we actually implement programs and provide funding that is more impactful? So that's what the North Star project is all about, is that we're wanting to take the 1590 funding. We are going to use it to vet those services. So they will have to apply for the money. And there is a leadership group, which the mayors will be a part of that. So we have a say in it, where we actually determine, based upon the criteria that's laid out. And that's not necessarily determined by the mayors, but by what we learn from the advocacy group that we're working with. And what would be the best method? And then we will, at that point, after they have applied, determine, we'll vet, and then the funding will be distributed. But I think it's really important. We're talking about housing. You're talking about how people move out of the area. I think you said it, Joe, because, you know, your child can't afford to do that. But this is actually taking people who actually have jobs here. And some of them even, you know, they have families here, and their children are going to school here, and or you name it, you know, have mental health issues, or they have domestic violence issues or whatever. We provide for them housing, and that's what we're doing. You're probably going to see, as you're moving through there, NOFA. N-O-F-A, and I wanted to let you know that stands for, it's an acronym, it stands for Notices of Funding Available. So it's grant opportunities in its head. And for us, NOFA provides matching grants to local housing trust funds established by cities and counties, which would be us. So next week, we are going to have Jennifer Johnson come, and I think George is coming with her. He actually, I think, oversees some of the NOFA funding. And they are going to really, I hope, go into more in-depth. That's what I'm hoping that they're doing, so that you have a better understanding of what it is that we're doing here. So with that, I didn't know if there were questions still or information that you would like Jennifer and George to bring. But this has been truly a project of the heart for all of us. And we have looked at it long and hard and made some hard decisions. And I gave you this, the final conditions, because this is what we're looking to do. This is what we hope that we do, is that, you know, we meet the best basic needs, and that it's humane housing and it's meaningful work. And it allows people to move, like almost like transitional housing, move out of a situation that maybe isn't the greatest, but as they work and become educated or whatever, they can find rewarding careers, lifelong learning, reliable transportation, and belonging, civic muscle. Because I honestly believe that how we support other cities impacts us. There's a payoff for us. And how they support us and other cities, how each city supports each other, there's a payoff for them and for us. We are better together, and we're stronger when we combined our resources and do what we're doing, very much like what we're doing with the fire department right now. All the fire departments together, the fire EMS, that's something that happened in 2019, and that we're sharing the funding, and we can do more with, in fact, it's kind of a saving grace for us right now, given our situation in our fire department, the saving grace. So we're very fortunate that it happened when it did. But anyway, questions?
How much money do they have? King County just voted a 5-year, $12 billion solution.
I don't believe in King County's solutions.
I'm saying, like, they have 5 years, $12 billion they're trying to convince to spend on these exact problems. How much money do we get allotted? How is that passed out to all the different...
So every city, depending on your population, determines how much of percentage of the money that's going to come to your community.
Okay.
So I don't know overall. We haven't looked at that overall. What we've discussed is how we're putting this together. Mm-hmm. Kelly could probably tell you how much we have coming in. I don't know if you have it off the top of your head, but
I want to say it was like 24,000 last year.
That's nothing.
Yeah, it's not very much.
So, and that was, are you sure? Are you sure that wasn't 1406?
It could have been.
That's 1406.
Review, yeah, I was thinking in the last review when we were talking about the whole process in 2020, I believe the estimated numbers that were provided to us was off the sales tax percentage was approximately 270,000 a year, and then 60% of that is what you're talking about being allocated
to different kinds of housing and treatment, right?
So it's still a drop in the bucket. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing there to actually solve the problem.
Yeah. But the rest of the cities, which are higher tax base,
have higher needs too. Look at Burlington, Mount Vernon, at least even going down Burlington Boulevard, and just the issues that happen there. I mean, I go down to the gym every day, and it is just a little bit out of control sometimes. Mm-hmm. I won't even shop the Safeway anymore sometimes,
no.
different times.
No.
I'm afraid to go down there.
Right, and then I have a handful of employees that work on or live in College Way area where all those apartments and stuff had just gone in for similar reasons through the Catholic services or whatever it was, and they said the increase in crime that they have is out of control. Their cars are getting broken into, things are getting stolen out of their yards, all things they never had prior to this stuff, to the infrastructure being put up to support situations. And so, I mean, it's just a concern from people that are living in the communities that the stuff is being put in. And then, like, with the Burlington Boulevard, it's just become crazy.
Crazy.
And unsafe. I mean, my daughter goes to practice 3 nights a week near the First Step Center, and we've had to lock down before because they've had literal police chases around the buildings, and you've got, you know, little girls practicing and they have to lock it down. I've had to stand outside because there are people loitering, trying to watch and trying to talk to them as they're coming in and out of the buildings. And so I've had to stand out there with my vehicles until all kids were accounted for going where they're supposed to be going. So it's just the unexpected repercussions of things that can happen in these situations.
That's why we're doing this. And I think it's a brilliant plan. It really is. And it's something that I think, out of compassion for our citizens and also for those who are in need, that moving forward with this, but this is why it was put together. It's for reasons like that. We don't want people like that having to have to continue living in the street. But more than that, I wouldn't want a mother who's not engaged in any of that, yet she's living out of her car, to have to put up with that either. Sure. I would like to think that she's got a home, some sort of an apartment that she can go to and be safe. So this is why we are doing it. And I really commend Commissioner Janicki for really pushing this together. It's not an easy thing to do when you've got 4 different cities with 4 different cultures and 4 different personalities and 4 different needs to pull them together and say, look, this is what we need to do. Because in the beginning, it was kind of like, well, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. And in the end, what you realize is, no, it's ours. And what can we do to make it better? We also have the opioid funding that's coming in. We put together a board. They needed somebody from one of the cities to represent us. I volunteered Charlie. He's willing to do it. So he's sitting on the board. So we'll hear more about that. We'll be hearing more about the opioid funding that we've already received. I think we've received one allotment of money already, right? So yeah, we've already received a lot of money and we're putting together the board and we'll be hearing more about that. Probably Charlie will be reporting on that because he's sitting on that board. So over to you, Charlie.
I just had a question of the amount of money that we'll be getting in from that. If we choose to put it in a group like this, can she show us of that money, how much is actually going to these different things versus paying the staff that's doing it? And then if we thought, no, I'd rather give it to this entity or this entity to do that, those like different things that we want to accomplish, mental health or housing, how much of it is actually getting to those groups because it's going to this?
Yeah, I think that I can actually ask her to do that. And I think she'd clearly be able to show you how that all works. Mind you, the groups that we put together, none of us are getting paid. The people who are getting any kind of funding right now are those people who are applying for the funding and then receiving it from the NOFA.
So right now the funding for housing and that sort of stuff is funding that these people have already found or are living in. It's not new infrastructure being put up to house additional.
Well, there has been, Martha's Place was just completed. That's with Catholic Community Services. That was the county Catholic Community Services, and I believe the city of Mount Vernon. That was a partnership, a really great partnership. And I believe they already, I don't know if they've opened it yet, but I think they already had it filled. People who are already moving in, not moving in, but what am I trying to say? Every apartment was accounted for before they even. So that's how great the need is. I can tell you that for a while, I volunteered as a chaplain out both at Peace Health in Bellingham and then also down here in Cedar Woolley. And the number of families that came in particular mothers who came in with children, and they were there because their children were sick because they were living out of their cars or living on the street and then back in their car. Yet the mother was trying to work and the children were going to school. It was sad. And we didn't have much of anything established in the county to help those families. We will now. And so there may be other, I wouldn't be surprised if there are not other buildings or facilities that will be going up to do that. I can tell you right now that there's a phase two for the, did I say it was called Skagit County? I call it the Behavioral Center. Anyway, there's a phase two. It's going to go behind the one that we have now. They've already received a grant in the amount of, I can't remember how many million.
15
million, something like that.
For 28 units.
Well, and what's nice about that is that our officers will be able to, if there's somebody who's got some mental health issues, they'll be able to pick them up, take them there, and drop them and go. Instead of calling someone trying to figure out, where can you put these people? You take them to the hospital. They look them over, they're back out on the street. You know, jails won't take them unless they, you know, committed some sort of a serious crime. So we're not doing any service to these individuals. And I get it, Sarah. I mean, you know, it's hard to have them here, but they're here. And they it's our responsibility to take care of them. And more than that, a lot of them, they've been here all along.
But in doing situations like this, are we doing it in a situation where there becomes so much red tape that we're really not providing them services to where, like, Family Promise doesn't have the government funding? So without that government funding, they don't have the red tape, and they've created a really good program that has helped a lot of people in our communities, mothers, families, children.
But they do receive federal funding because
correct,
they
but
do
it's less than 2% of the last bit of information. So my concern becomes what kind of services are we providing and what kind of outcomes will we get? You know, like, where are we best to spend our tax dollars to best serve our community without creating the burden? And that's just, I think, our due diligence as council is looking at the picture and all of that, looking at our community. And completely understanding that it exists. I know that it exists. I've provided meals at Family Promise before. I see it. I drive through town at 6 a.m. before businesses are open. I know where certain people sleep or what they, you know, I see it.
Well, those are good questions that we can actually present to George and to Jennifer. And mm-hmm. they would be able to answer that. And I think that they would appreciate those questions. So anyway, good program.
I just want to make sure, like, see, Seattle, King County, whatever, they're throwing a bunch of money and it's doing nothing because they joined forces and they're doing this. I don't know that we aren't more successful individually in our communities getting the things. And I want to make sure we're not going to be joining forces for money that's not going to be successful. So that's just my concern with this.
Madam Mayor, if
I'm just going here, I think Brendan had.
Okay.
Go ahead. Nick?
Oh, I thought you said Brendan did have some. Brendan, did you want to?
He pointed his finger at you and he said, let him go.
Oh, okay. I think that there's a huge heart there has been for many years to help people that are hard up. You know, I think, you know, the way I think about it is it's separated into at least four different groups, can be more. You have VAs that maybe have come back, since you've come back from the war, and they're just kind of hard up from that. You've had people that have experienced severe traumas in their life, loss of kids, loss of spouse. You have some people who have hit hard times, lost their job, couldn't get back up. You do have a populace that's transient, and you have a populace that's mentally ill with the combination of drug addiction. And so when we look at that, we oftentimes group everybody together and we want to do a lot. But what we've seen, and I think it's frustrated a lot of people, is that the situation's growing. The populace within those groups are growing, mainly in the transient and the people that are using drugs. That group is growing in numbers exponentially over the years. And I'm talking about, did we see these kind of camps in the 80s? Did we see them even in the 90s? I mean, we started seeing like a fluctuation of these happening and then just a massive growth of it. So I think we just looking at what people were doing, what we have done, and seeing, is there metrics to see a shrinking populace of the people that are in need of help? And that's going to be saying that we're succeeding in what we're doing. Otherwise, we'll see a continual growth. And usually it's because of dependency, or it's because of free, of which I have some personal knowledge with close people that I love and care about, who see things as free, and then they have no reason to move forward. And then it just grows, friends and the populace of that kind of encampment grows. So I don't know. That's something I would propose to George and see, you know, if they have metrics that'll show reduction in numbers over years and programs that we're implementing. That makes sense.
Okay, thank you.
I just want to first applaud the effort. I think it's smart to look at what everyone else is doing and have a team effort. But I remember one of the reasons we pulled the funding back so that the council, the city itself, could direct the funds was for that exact reason. Where we see like Family Promise and Susan Williams, 100 grand for 2027. They want to do a program. Would we be able to, in that year, say, hey, we're going to pull some funds from this community effort and focus on C2O.
Yes, because we've already done that. They were also looking at the 1406, and we hadn't even distributed that yet to Family Promise. And I told them that was off the table, that we were looking at giving that to Family Promise. So we do have the opportunity to do that. We do have to make sure that we are within the criteria. So we have, which Kelly will keep us on track with that. We don't want the auditors coming back to us and saying, you cannot do this. So
we retain that flexibility.
We do retain
that. If Anacortes has a big private for Skagit County, could we help fund that 1 year, but then the next year
we could. Anacortes actually, they voted to, how did they do that? So they've already allotted all their funds because they're doing tiny houses right now over there. They have the family, what do you call it, family center over there. They're building a daycare as well. They've allotted their funds. I think they've also got another, they're building like the Martha's House. They have one of those going up over there in Anacortes. They're doing a lot of really great things. They've also got staff to handle it. That's something else that you need to keep in mind is that, in fact, that's what Glenn was really upset about, that's why he didn't want us to take the funding. Is because he said we don't have the staffing and the county can do better with the money than we can do. But
what I love about this is that we do have that say so. And also I'm there. I have a right to represent Cedar Woolley, and I have a right to say what I think is what we would like to see as a group, where the money should go. So
one other quick thing I had was, if this group decides that, hey, Cedar Woolley needs a 200 person house to fulfill these needs, do you have a say to say that that's not the council, that's not what the city wants? You don't want to have that type of project at Cedar Woolley? Or if they make a decision, is that going to impact?
Absolutely, we have that say so. So, but bear in mind too that if it's a private, if somebody owns that property, they have the right to do with it what they want. And if they're coming to the county and they're saying, you know, I want to build affordable housing here, and this is how I want to do it. I don't know. John might be able to answer this, but I don't think that we could have barriers. There could be things that could keep us from saying, no, we don't want this. I can tell you that, they also do affordable housing and whatnot. They're out of Bellingham. They also have affordable housing over in LeConnor and in Mount Vernon. And they wanted to do, that's exactly it, Home Trust of Skagit. They wanted to do housing here for veterans, but they couldn't find any place that was big enough to do that. But they were looking to apply for a grant, and the grant would have been ran through us. So they would have helped us apply for it. We would have applied for it, but the money would just run through us to them to work the housing for vets. But I think you've already hit the nail on the head when you say that we're actually limited as far as our growth. We are that long. The only place that we can go is north. And we can't afford to go much further north because we don't have the sewer capacity. It's really expensive to do that. That's right. I mean, we just don't have the ability.
That was what I was going to add into it. It comes down to working the site. Yeah. These are big facilities. And I heard $15 million for those 28 units. As a commercial real estate guy, I'm just like,
well, that's what I read in the paper.
That's crazy. You should be able to do 100 plus units for $15 million. It depends where they site it. But it needs sewer. It needs water.
Or they're requesting the grant. Yeah.
Well, be on that side.
Got my attention.
So anyway, so they'll be here next Wednesday, and these are really good questions, and I encourage you to ask questions. Did you have another?
I'll ask it next week.
Okay. We're dying to hear it now.
Well, no, it's kind of tying into what Carolyn was saying, was like you had mentioned that someone's going to vet applications from like Habitat. That will be someone Scott County, or is that?
Yeah, it's a group of people who we meet twice a year.
So you'd be like one of the voting members for it.
Mm-hmm. I think my email just received it today. Yeah, I would be. Would that answer your question though? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would be. Okay, it's called Low Income Housing Allocation Committee. That's what it is. Yeah, I see that. All right. Well, other than that, we don't have anything else. Not unless Kelly, do you have anything that you'd like to share or anything you'd like to add?
Just that dollar amount was about 200. And mm-hmm.
We were talking about roundabouts and whatnot. So in case you haven't heard this, I was really disheartened when I heard this. Because I'm not a real fan of roundabouts, although I believe they're safe, but there's a lot of them in this city. But the county, well, it's actually WASDOT, is going to be putting in 3 roundabouts between here and Burlington. And I think the first one starts at Collins Road. And then I think it goes right up the highway there between Cedar and Burlington. I don't know. That's a good question.
There was a survey crew out there today.
Yeah.
The DOT. I was wondering what they were doing.
They want to do it this summer, and they want to do all 3 at once. Yeah. So driver beware, because probably
And it's only that one light that you never really hit.
So it's not that one kind of trigger.
Just so you know, and I'm sure you're going to hear about it from your constituents, and I know I'm going to get calls. So, yeah.
Those are going in on.
Yeah, between your relatives. I think starting.
I just did a Google search on the Skagit Stabilization Campus, and it looks like in December, the Department of Commerce awarded several grants and $5.8 million for the Skagit County Crisis Stabilization Center in Cedarville is what was, that was just from December of 2022. So
thank you.
That's probably
for phase two.
For phase two.
Right.
Which I think might just be 16 beds from my recollection.
No, they said it was actually going to be 32. So I think
I think it's 16 in the first and 16 in the second. First.
Well, maybe 32. Okay.
But
it's out, they're actually beautiful on the inside. Not that any of us will ever get in to see it. But, oh, well, unless. But unless. Yeah, a really beautiful one. And it's a nice effort. That was a nice combination of you, Senator Wagner and Representative Eslick were part of that group that helped funded the county piece or the state piece of it. The commissioners, the county, they funded grants from that, or they applied for grants and helped that happen. And we actually found the property for them. And they ended up purchasing it. So, and that was back in 2018, 2019. Yeah, so it's a good partnership. We have a lot of really good partnerships, and that's so important. It's really important that we maintain that as a city. Really important. Especially in an era where there's so much division. Okay. Well, if there's nothing else for the good of the order, I hear nothing. It's 7:51 and we'll adjourn. Have a good night, everybody.